Hello and welcome to The Rooster Crows. I'm your host for today, Roberta Howie. As a minister in the United Church of Canada, I am thrilled to be able to bring you my sermon from March 9th, which was about the anniversary of the United Church of Canada and therefore, with Women's History Month, a look at the early Christian women of the UCC, including how women's ordination came to be. I invite you to sit back with me as we explore this together in this season of Lent, reflection, and resisting temptation. The scripture today is about Jesus wandering in the desert and encountering Satan, being tempted multiple times by Satan to give up his power, to assert his authority, and to disobey what God has put forth before him as his calling. And with that reading in mind, I invite us to look at the United Church. My friend Marion will regularly tell you that she was born a non-person. Before 1928, she was among the last group of women that would be, according to the Government of Canada, considered a non-person, as only persons could serve on the Senate, and the federal government at that point had determined that only men are persons. Ergo, Marion, like thousands of other female Canadians, along with many other Canadians who were not white, of the right age, or were perhaps dealing with disabilities, they were non-persons. While many women could vote by the late 1920s, this was a hard-fought battle. There were campaigns everywhere that women needed to know their place, against treating all of the women that were fighting for equality, treating them as too masculine. They were crash, they were crude, they were rude. They asserted themselves too boldly, and they needed to be shoved back into the kitchen. After the First World War, many soldiers returned home and returned to the jobs that the women who were back here on the home front had taken in their stead. After all, someone needed to farm or take care of the factories. And any woman who wanted to be involved in politics or fighting, in any of the spheres, legal, medical, academic, they're fighting against nature itself. Don't worry about all of the big troubles that you have, ladies. Go back to the world of the kitchen. Thank God that these women did not listen. They may not have had been perfect, but they were stubborn and they were resilient. And along with the activists across the country, fighting for Indigenous, queer, and disabled women, among many others throughout the decades, we are now in Canada one of the most equal countries across genders. One would hope that this fight could end, that we can rest, all of us, but that would make for a short and boring sermon. Alongside the women demanding their space in the political sphere, there were also women in the church who had dreams and callings of their own. Women in all of the churches that became the United Church, that's the Presbyterian, the Congregationalist, and the Methodist, along with the Evangelical United Brethren and several other independent ministries through the years, none of them allowed women to be ordained. The ministers that were there were only allowed to be men, though I will say the Methodists allowed them to preach on occasion. They were also allowed to run Sunday schools across the board. They planned their church events, they fundraised, they served on missionary committees, they ran pastoral care programs, they did the outreach. To be titled reverend, to do the sacraments that that title bestows, that was strictly a male role. The best you can get, as was suggested to me when I was in seminary, was to be a minister's wife, which was and is a tough role and one I'm not cut out for. That would not do for Lydia Grucci. She graduated her third degree in theology and was permitted to serve 6 appointments in northern Saskatchewan, which means that she is tougher than any minister I can know. But she was not allowed to be ordained. She only served these roles as a lay person, going around preaching, offering pastoral care, but she was not allowed to do the sacraments, which is baptisms, communion, and weddings. During this time, she wanted to become a minister. She had a calling. Her brother died on his path to become a minister in a car accident, and she decided to take up the mantle in his stead. So in 1925, the UCC was formed, and 1 year later, in 26, she asked for the first time to be ordained in the United Church of Canada, and she was declined. Nellie McClung is one of the famous five women activists who fought for the person's case for the right for women to serve in the Senate. And she was at that meeting, and she noted that it was not the men who said no, it was the women who voted against her ordination. It was only in 1936, almost a decade after the UCC was formed, and almost a decade of pleading her case to all parts of the government body of the UCC, did Lydia become ordained and became the Reverend Lydia Grucci. Why turn her down? There were lots of dissenting arguments on record, many of which will not surprise us here. Jesus' apostles were men, they brought up scripture, they brought up theological debates, and ultimately, while those arguments are ones that are used today in other denominations, I want to focus on a couple that still sneak into the UCC. Two arguments gave me pause. One from H.A. Kent, written and spoken at the General Council meeting in 1928. He writes, and I quote, "What the church needs at the present time is not more femininity, but more masculinity. Women's work in the church is carried on with admirable zeal and faithfulness. What are men doing?" The idea from this particular argument is that women have their own spheres, and if they were to enter the male spheres, then there wouldn't be room for men to do their own work. And in his defense, I guess, women did have their own spheres. There was the Women's Missionary Society, which then became the Ladies' Aid, then the Dominion Council of Women's Association, and that association positioned itself as working alongside the clergy for the advancement of the UCC. It was one that was the most well known for everything from fundraising to missionary work in Canada and abroad. It often offered the education portion, so Sunday school and confirmation classes, a lot of that materials came from there. There were also many associations that worked alongside the UCC for particular projects that women did all the time. And of course, there were deaconesses, women who have been clergy today, but were offered these positions instead, where they could serve as lay preachers, they could offer pastoral care, they could do Sunday school work, but again, not allowed to do the sacraments and not allowed the title of reverend. It was a lot of the responsibility of ministry and no title and a lot less compensation. And the moment that she got married, she had to be booted out. There were a lot of organizations at the UCC that were governed solely by women and for women because they could not be clergy themselves and so created the supports to literally keep the roofs on buildings. If a woman can be ordained as a minister as well, then how will the men be impacted when this is one of the few spheres that only men are allowed to be in? Now they'll have to compete with the women. The second argument is even more insidious. It is the one where it sneaks in, and I find that it's the temptation part of Lent that speaks to my heart on this one. After all, quote unquote, ministry is such hard work. Long hours, thankless tasks, the demands never end and you're exhausted. Is this what we want our women to sign up for? When they are so well suited for the home, where they flourish in their own domain, why make them suffer? Won't Miss Grucci and others be tired? Why should they have to wear themselves down when they can stay where they belong? Aren't you tired? Aren't you exhausted? This is a benevolent argument that snakes its way around the heart. It can pierce deeper than any other barb. Have a sexist individual come up and tell a female minister, you're going to burn in hell for preaching the sermon today, that you are not a real minister, you're not a real priest, that you're not supposed to be here because my theology says so, and get out of the pulpit. Well, very few of us are worried. Angry, yes. Worried? No. We can hear the evil in that comment. We can see the devil on their shoulder. We can see the ways that they are trying to lead us from the call of God, and that is so easy to spot. But the comments that worm their way in, the ones that are wrapped in velvet, the ones that soothe your heart, those ones are harder. Isn't this work exhausting? Maybe it's too much. If you're going to be hurt by it emotionally all the time, maybe you need to stop and try something easier. Let someone with a more hardened heart take this on. Don't worry, we can let others do it, who are better suited and smarter and stronger than you to do this. They can handle it. You don't need to do this anymore. This argument is a lullaby. After all, ministry is hard work. I'm not here to argue that. Whether it's here in a congregation, or if we're at the hospital bedside, or we're at the graveside, it can be a lot and it can demand a lot. Just like many other careers out there, teachers, doctors, lawyers, accountants, students, people who work in retail, people who work with children, people who are stay-at-home parents, after having this argument that we need to give up a career that's so hard to simply be a stay-at-home parent, when we all know that stay-at-home parenting is exhausting. These are all incredibly difficult jobs that come with their own limitations. So when someone like Satan comes in and starts giving us temptation, giving us an opportunity to just give up, it sneaks in like a thief in the night. It whispers across the desert like Satan reminding Jesus how tired and hungry he must be, and all he has to do is turn that one stone to bread. No one will get hurt. He'll be fed. Give it a try. Or when Jesus knows that he is here as the King of Kings, and Satan puts him on the top of the cliff and says, "I can help you rule all this with a snap of your fingers. No work involved. You must be exhausted." Jesus knows that this is not coming from a benevolent voice, this is coming from something insidious. But the work is hard. And when Satan brings Jesus to the top of the tower and says, "Throw yourself off and let your God save you. After all, God is here to save you," he knows that that is tempting, not because it is an easy thing to do, but because he knows that he is here to die in a very horrible death on Good Friday. Jesus knows that he doesn't have to die, but he does, in order for the covenant that God has put for us all to be fulfilled to happen. But the devil is offering him an opportunity to not die, to not suffer, to not be in pain. And that must be tempting. After all, Jesus was also human. All he has to do is give in. No work required. No worries. These benevolent arguments work so well because they are insidious. And they work because they speak to our desires. Not to never work again, not to never have to toil again, but not to see ourselves and others in pain. To not about abandoning our dreams and our goals, but not to have to keep fighting with our fellow family, our friends, our neighbors along the way, to have to be told how tired we are and constantly fighting. Because we're tired. It is not wrong to want to stop, and indeed, if you are listening to this and know that you are being exploited, that this is too much, your own mental and physical health demand you stop, God needs you taken care of and alive far more than God needs you in that job. The question for us is not about the content. It is exhausting. We all know that. It is about who is saying it and why. Satan does not care about Jesus' hunger or his exhaustion or his fear. He just knows that it could be exploited for his own use. The detractors of early women in the pulpit didn't care about their mental or physical or spiritual health. They didn't care about their dreams to become women with children or women without children or anything like that. If they did, it was baked into layers of sexism. Instead, they cared only that that might be the reason to keep a woman out of the pulpit. Their message was simple. We don't think you should do this because we want you to rely on us to tell you what to do. This is what makes it such a challenge to resist the temptation of quitting, because there's a kernel of truth in what's being said. Whether it's ministry being tiring, as is working in the medical field or legal field, retail, education, any form of work, it can be exhausting. Being a stay-at-home parent is exhausting, but it also comes with a sense of accomplishment, knowing that you are doing a thing here, making the world a better place. There's nothing wrong with acknowledging that, and there's nothing wrong with acknowledging it would simply be easier to ignore the ills of the world, to stop caring. But it is the speaker who is wrong. It is the conclusion being drawn that is wrong. Satan tells us it is tiring, so give up and let others think for you, vote for you, preach for you, do what they want and say it is for you. No. Instead, Jesus tells us it's tiring. Take your break. Rest. Work together. We move together. We sit and pray and love together. It is tiring, so we rely on the strength of God's love and the love of Christ, who is giving us the strength to keep going. When Marian and others talk about being a non-person, no matter how young they are, when that non-person status was enacted and then revoked, it is about being given permission to care about the world and want to do something about it, being given the right to have the responsibility. But she is no longer a non-person. She has been a person for much of her life, a very active political person. You are a person, and so am I. We don't need anyone's permission to care about the world. We do not need to have the right to have the responsibility for caring and loving for each other. It is a gift. It is a blessing from God to be able to want to make our tiny corner of the world better, even if it's just for ourselves for that moment. It means that Reverend Lydia Grucci did not need to become a minister to make the world better. But thank God she did, because it opened the door for all of us who wanted to answer that call with that title. She was called by God, and she made the world better. This Lenten season, we're called upon to discern who is telling us to give up and why they're telling us to give up. Is it because they want us to rest, take a deep breath, and together we make the world easier? Is it because it's easier for you to give up so that they can keep going? God never wants us to give up entirely, never to quit, but instead, God says, here you can rest. Give me your burden, for it is heavy. My yoke is light. Here you can feel my unconditional love and know that you are my beloved. No one, regardless of gender, is a non-person to me. Rest, discern, pray, and when you're ready, we'll all stand up and tell the devil to get behind us. We got work to do. Have a very blessed Lenten season. Thank you for being with us today on The Rooster Crows. I'm Reverend Roberta Howie, one of the hosts here, and you can find our sermons here on whatever you're listening to for your podcasts. You can also find us on YouTube at Lawrence Park Community Church or our website at lawrenceparkchurch.ca. Until next time, take care.